The month of June has been hijacked by the anti-Christian culture to show their pride in something God calls an abomination. When you support AFR, you help us continue to stand for godly values and provide the resources for you to stay in the know about the enemy's tactics. To say thank you for your gift this month, we'll give you the booklet, Inside the LGBTQ Push of the 1990s, to help strengthen your convictions. Just go to afr.net/offers. afr.net/offers.
Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues. That's the name of this program here on the American Family Radio Network for this Tuesday, June the 3rd, 2025. Thanks for listening to AFR. Joining me in studio is Wesley Wildman. Good morning, Wesley.
Good morning, and glad to be back on Today's Issues.
Glad to have you back.
Mm-hmm. Was off for a couple of weeks, had some work travel, then had some vacation travel, and now back to real life.
Yes, back to the real world.
Real world, yep.
Chris Woodward, good morning, Brother Chris.
Good morning.
And Ray Pritchard, good morning, Ray.
Hey, good morning, Tim. How you doing today?
Doing well. Good to talk to you again. You're busy with your summer travel some?
We've been out and about. We were in Florida last week and home for a very few days. And then it really starts next week up to Chicago, then to Oregon, and then back here. It's just this summer has us going from coast to coast. So I'm glad to be able to drop in and be with you guys today.
Now, for those who don't know, your ministry, Keep Believing, that's the name of it, Keep Believing. And you can check Ray out at keepbelieving.com. But Ray travels the country teaching the scripture at various summer camps. That's what, so you do two or three of them?
This summer I'm doing five, which is a little much. We start in Oregon and be there in about a week and a half. And then in July we're going to be in upstate New York and then in New Jersey. And then back home, and then up to Maine, almost to Canada, then back home, and then back to New Jersey again. So basically this summer, it's the West Coast and up in the Northeast.
Mm-hmm. Hey, you did better than I do. I've got a similar type schedule, but at least you knew where you were going. I don't know if it's a personality thing, but I don't look until the day before. I know I'm going somewhere.
Right.
But don't ask me a question. I look at everything the day before, and I have my – I have my moment where I just soak it all up and I learn everything. But wow, that was impressive, Ray. You want to do that one more time for us?
I don't think I could, Wesley.
Hey, you know? I was going to ask you a serious question. So obviously we know you travel. Are any of these places new places, or are these returning places?
The first four are places I've been for: Cannon Beach, Word of Life, America's Keswick, and the Living Waters up in Maine. But for the first time ever in the summer, I'm going to a place, Wesley, on the New Jersey Atlantic seashore, a place called Harvey Cedars Bible Conference. Okay. Old Bible conference, been around, I guess, about 90 years. And I have never been there to do a week of summer Bible conference. And I'm showing you with my hand here.
Yeah, you're watching.
It's right on the Atlantic. It's what you think. Harvey Cedars is right on the Atlantic Ocean there.
Wonderful. Let me add this quick plug too, and then I'll pass it over to Dad. Years ago, way before I was even, I mean, they're talking about high school days, middle school and high school days, before I even met Ray personally, or even was, you know, went through college and came here, Keep Believing Ministries had a major impact on my life for many, many years early on, primarily because of their apologetic material that Ray offers. And so I encourage those that have young high school, college students that are, you know, kind of questioning things, trying to figure some things out, trying to grow in their maturity and their depth of the scriptures. Ray's ministry and the website of being able to engage that age group is phenomenal. So go check out keepbelieving.com. Tons of materials. You can go back for, you can archive probably a decade's worth of materials, right?
Oh, at least that much, and some of it may go back a couple of decades. So, Wesley, thank you so much.
Amen.
Appreciate it. And, yeah, folks, come see us at keepbelieving.com.
Keepbelieving.com. Dr. Frank Turek will be on the way in just a few moments. Frank usually doesn't have much to say or offer to the program.
But we got
to
have him on.
But we got to have we'll see what he does today. he'll be on with us in just a few minutes on the program. We look forward to talking to him. What's leading the news, Chris?
Well, Canadian wildfire smoke continues to pose a threat to several U.S. states, states including Michigan and Minnesota. For people not aware of this, massive wildfires from British Columbia through Alberta and Saskatchewan, Manitoba, Ontario, thousands of acres are on fire, and that continues to pose an air quality alert, again, for people in states like Michigan and Minnesota. I've got a little bit of audio from Fox weather meteorologist Adam Klotz talking about the severity of the situation. Clip one.
I mean, the air quality is certainly bad in that region. It's actually spilling in the United States. If you guys remember, 2 years ago, it was June 7th, so almost exactly right now, when all of that smoke funneled into New York City. That was 5 million acres burned. We're looking at close to 5 million acres burned here, but this obviously much further off towards the west. As Todd was kind of mentioning, the air quality as a result is really plummeting, and it's beginning to seep not only across Canada, but down in some of these areas across the United States.
Meanwhile, parts of South Carolina today are experiencing a separate but related threat. High ozone pollution levels worsened by weekend smoke interaction. So Michigan, Minnesota, mm-hmm. South Carolina, your air quality is probably not going to be the best today.
I just know that I had PTSD when I read a headline that said "Stay in the government regulating you to stay inside." Then I had to read the
story.
Not
again.
I had to read the story. The headline alone, I PTSD, but I understand what they're doing. They're trying to look out for. I get you.
Right.
It took me a minute.
I guess you're not nothing affecting the Kansas City region, right?
Well, we've got Noah's flood on the way here.
Okay.
There's smoke and haze everywhere else, and we are in the. You know, sometimes I tell you, Tim, I'll give you tea time, but it's all underwater this morning.
Well, have you talked to your sons up in Montana? You got one son living in Montana, right?
One in Montana, yeah. And they've been hit with crazy weather dropping down from Canada, and
with the
also
smoke
the haze.
Too?
And, yeah, yes, the haze and the smoke, the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, I know that South Carolina, they've had the forest fires going on for weeks.
I didn't realize that. Yeah. Well, I was on vacation, too. Yeah, I'm plugged.
Right. I know. One of the websites I read is Daily Mail, usually, and they're a news site, but they're also sensationalist with their words that they use. Everything is amazing or tragic or horrific. Or they got some adjective to get you to – it's clickbait, right?
Yeah.
So, but they were talking about the Saharan desert air dust coming over here.
Okay.
To cross the ocean, going to impact some states here, and then they talk about these wildfires.
One other weather story today. This is from the Weather Channel. Hurricane season obviously began on June 1st, and the National Hurricane Center is already tracking something they say we need to watch off the southeast coast. If you're east of Florida on up through the Carolinas, you may be getting some sort of tropical disturbance here in the coming days.
Okay. Well, listen, we got enough problems in this country. We don't need to start thinking ahead about problems we might have, right, Chris?
Oh,
well, listen, if we ran our lives worried about something, we'd never get anything done.
Every year a Republican is in the White House is when they warn against major hurricane season.
Because of
global climate change caused by Republicans.
This is because Donald Trump and the big beautiful bill
are causing the climate to warm, which causes major hurricanes. It's just like, and then when the Democrats get into office, then they say, well, you know, that like Biden went to when Biden was in office, he went down to Kentucky.
For the tornado.
The tornado. help me out here. We have a lot of listeners there. I've lost my.
Talk about the name of the. Are you looking for the name?
Town,
of the town.
The town that was.
We'll get the town. I thought you were thinking about the tornado.
It was.
Wait for it.
No, it was the town in Kentucky that was almost destroyed.
Mayfield.
Yeah, Mayfield, and Biden said this is because of climate change.
Says the guy who flew in a giant airplane to get there.
Right. Duly noted. But I'm going like, they're acting like tornadoes have never happened in America before, you know. But it was just, they just politically exploiting it to try to make people believe that, quote, the carbon.
And they don't waste time either.
No, no. They,
just like anyway. They don't do with the mass shooting or.
Right.
They don't waste time.
Place blame.
Yep.
All right. You're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. We're joined now by Dr. Frank Turek, host of I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist, heard Saturday at 9 a.m. Central Time and Sunday afternoon at 4 p.m. Central Time right here on American Family Radio. Good morning, Brother Frank.
The climate's going to be just fine, ladies and gentlemen, because Jesus is later going to burn the whole thing up.
Oh, carbon. He doesn't need a carbon footprint.
That's global warming.
Oh, okay? Is that right? Okay.
That's the best way to start your message right there.
That's right.
Yep.
He's going to burn it up and start over.
Yeah.
When is that going to happen?
Yeah. No one knows the time nor the hour, the day nor the season.
Burn the whole thing up and start over.
That's right. We just always have to be ready. He could come at any minute.
Well, that's true. No, we're joking around here about, but that's true. What you just said is true. Jesus will return again to earth. Hey, I want to ask you, Frank, we were talking about a clip that somebody sent me this morning from Twitter. It's got to be real, right? Anyway, it was about a gentleman in England. Great Britain, N.T. Wright.
Yes.
He's a well-known, what is he, a well-known what?
He's a well-known biblical scholar who wrote actually a very good book on the resurrection in 2003 called The Resurrection of the Son of God. It's one of the better books on the resurrection out there.
Okay. Well, my question, the tweet that was sent to me, and I haven't watched the whole thing, so I should... But all it says that this gentleman, N.T. Wright, who you just said, says that you don't have to believe in the bodily resurrection of Christ to be a Christian. Now, do you have to believe?
Well, first of all, he didn't actually say that.
Okay, that's a good point to make.
He didn't say that. Okay. He said a friend of his, who also was a scholar, Marcus Borg, more on the liberal side, didn't believe in it.
Okay.
But he in other ways, seemed to be following Jesus. And what N.T. Wright was trying to say is he is a muddled Christian. A muddled Christian.
Okay.
And
So this is one of those, a friend of a friend.
Yeah, this is a good point to make. I didn't send this to like four or five people, including, I think Frank. I sent this to you, right?
Yeah, I saw it. Yeah,
you okay, said it. So it was a tweet. And, of course, on the Internet, what's the old saying about the... a lie travels around the world before the truth has a chance to put its pants on.
That's right.
So he didn't actually say that, this gentleman, N.T. Wright, that a lot of people are familiar with. But here's the question I have, the broader question I have related to this.
Well, the other guy did, though, right?
Yeah, his friend.
Friend did.
N.T. Wright's friend that he was referring to.
Marcus Borg, yeah. Another scholar who has passed on, yes.
Yes. So he can't defend himself, right? People get attacked after they die, and then they can't defend themselves. But he did say what he said, according to N.T. Wright. But the broader question I have is, Frank, can you name three or four essentials? I know this is basic and elementary, and people are going, why are you asking this question? We all know the answer to it. But there's a reason why we have creeds.
Yes.
And there's a reason why we have these things we believe. There's a reason that God put the Ten Commandments on tablets that would be read forevermore. I mean, are there essentials that you have to believe in order to be a Christian?
Yes, there are. I know some people will get annoyed over this. And what the analogy I give people when they say, well, who made you the boss of what Christianity is and isn't, you know?
Right.
I simply ask people this question. Let's suppose we were all with Moses at the base of Mount Sinai when he came down with the Ten Commandments. And he said, here are the Ten Commandments that Yahweh has given us. And we all look at Moses and we say, Moses, we don't like those ten. We have our own ten. Should we call ourselves followers of Yahweh?
Is that a rhetorical question or should we
No, really, should we?
No.
No.
No, of course not. We're not agreeing with Yahweh. So why would we call us followers of Yahweh, right? When we look at Christianity, we have certain doctrinal statements that define what the faith is. Without those statements, without those truths, then Christianity could be atheism, right?
Exactly. Yep.
I mean, you've got to in some way differentiate what you believe about God, what you believe about yourself, what you believe about Jesus, what you believe about the resurrection, what you believe about salvation, what you believe about heaven and hell and all these things. In fact, it's been put this way. You know, you know, it's how you hear people saying, well, you know, religions all teach basically the same thing. They teach you just ought to love one another. That's what people will say. And the response to that is, first of all, that's not true. Some religions don't teach you ought to love one another. In fact, that's the big reason we have all this violence in the Middle East, right? They don't teach you ought to love one another. But let's say for the sake of argument, they did. What we could say is, yeah, all religions teach basically you ought to love one another. They only differ on the nature of man, the nature of God, sin, salvation, heaven, hell, and creation. Outside of that, they're exactly the same, right?
I mean, right.
The truth is, major world religions are only superficially the same and essentially different. They are not essentially the same and superficially different. And of course, Christianity is centered around the fact that God himself comes to earth, lives the perfect life in our place, allows the creatures that rebelled against him to torture and kill him. So since he is infinitely just, he could take our punishment upon himself and then give us his righteousness if we trust in him. Christianity is a completely 100% grace religion, unlike any other worldview. And it's built on an historical fact that Jesus came to earth, lived the perfect life in our place, died, rose again to prove he was God, that he had a divine nature and a human nature, and by trusting in him, we're not only forgiven, but we're given his righteousness. That's what it's essentially all about. And for someone to come along and say, well, I'm a Christian, but I don't believe Jesus was God, which Marcus Borg didn't believe, and that's the friend of N.T. Wright, and to say that Jesus didn't rise from the dead, he may have risen spiritually, but not physically, this is not someone that is claiming to adhere to some of the fundamental doctrines of Christianity. If you miss the resurrection, you miss everything.
Okay, so this is Wesley here. So there's obviously things in the scripture that you can extrapolate, and then there's some that are very specific.
By the way, I'm impressed with the word extrapolate.
Oh, well, I appreciate it. I was a B+ in English.
Yeah, well, and you were also, you hung around me a lot.
That's so. Right. That helps. That kind of rubbed
I had
off.
Some influence there.
Then you got.
Go ahead and extrapolate.
I was extrapolating. Then you got peripheral and core issues is another way of saying it. So this is where I've found over the years is that this is how you end up with different denominations. Obviously, you know, not speaking anything too smart there. But so where would, and again, you're even within this conversation, you're going to get divisions among Christians, but where would you personally
you're not going to get into like tongues and role of women in the church and
no I'm going to ask Frank okay, good. What are the core essentials to the Christian faith?
Okay, go.
Well, the core essentials of the Christian faith is there is a God, you are not him, that this God came to earth, as I mentioned earlier, in human form, died, rose again to prove he was God. And by trusting in him, you're not only forgiven, but you're given his righteousness. So we're believing in God. We're believing that Jesus is also God. He's the second person of the Trinity. We're believing that we're sinners and we can't save ourselves. And by trusting in him, we're forgiven and given his righteousness. And the fact that Jesus rose from the dead confirms that he was God and confirms our ultimate state. And if you look at, say, the Nicene Creed, there's one God, the Father Almighty. Jesus Christ is the only begotten Son of God. He was begotten, not made. He's co-equal with the Father. There's the Holy Spirit, who is the Lord, the giver of life. There's one holy and universal church. I know the word Catholic is there, but people get confused. It doesn't mean Roman Catholic. It means universal church. And there's a resurrection of the dead. There's a life of the world to come. and there's going to be a judgment. These are all essentials of the faith. As Tim was mentioning earlier, you know, there are secondary issues like end times, you know, when is that going to happen? How is it going to happen? There's baptism. Is it, you know, immersion or sprinkling? Is it, do you believe in Calvinism or Arminianism or Molinism? Do you believe in women pastors and all the, you know, you can argue over all those things. They're secondary issues compared to the essentials. And Paul says this in Romans 10, if you confess with your mouth Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved.
Right.
Okay, Frank, it's amazing. I'm glad that you brought this up, Romans 10, because I opened it. I've got it open here on YouVersion because it's such a great point. Believe, confess with your mouth, Jesus is Lord. And then it says, believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead. So I listened to that same clip you listened to where N.T. Wright was talking about his friend Marcus Borg and, you know, a muddled Christian and all of that. And N.T. Wright essentially says that Marcus Borg doesn't believe in the physical resurrection. He believes that Jesus was raised spiritually. I don't even know what that means because in Romans 10:9, see, God raised him, Jesus, the man who died in the body, raised him. To me, it has to mean raised in the body from the dead. So what does it mean? What could it possibly mean, Frank, to be raised in the spirit but not in the flesh?
Well, it could mean that, yeah, he just went, his spirit went to be with the Father, similar to what happens to us now when we die, you know, absent from the body, present with the Lord, and our bodies and our spirits will be reunited at a future period. But there's no way of proving that empirically. You see, the apostles took the hard way to show that Christianity is true. They could have said, oh, he's resurrected in our hearts, you know, when his body is still in the tomb. Mm-hmm. How can you prove that, right? But when he walks out of the tomb and the tomb remains empty, and the Jews and the Romans would have loved to have squashed Christianity by taking the body out of the tomb, parading it around the city and saying, stop all this nonsense, talk about the resurrection. Here's his body, he's dead. They didn't do that. They said he physically rose from the dead. That's an empirical claim that can be verified. It's not just, oh, I have this sense he's gone to be with the Father while his body rots in the tomb. They took the hard way. Also, I think this shows that ultimately God wins. If Satan had somehow won in the physical world, meaning that our bodies were never resurrected, that wouldn't mean that God had power over Satan to resurrect the body, to resurrect us ultimately. The resurrection of Christ and a remade heavens and earth shows that God ultimately wins in this physical creation. It's not just a spiritual resurrection. It's a physical resurrection.
I'm reading through like the Romans and the Corinthians, 1st, 2nd Corinthians and so forth. And Paul, the Apostle Paul, everybody knows who that is if you're familiar with the Bible. It's like I'm exaggerating here, but it's like once a chapter, he goes, he basically saying, I'm talking about a man who was raised from the dead. Okay.
who he saw.
He rose up from the dead. Okay. So our faith is in somebody who conquered sin and physical death. And so it's just over and over and over and over and over again. There's no, like you're saying,
you're saying the Bible claims that he physically resurrected.
No,
it didn't leave for
ambiguity. There's no nuance or there's no metaphoric translation or, you know, it's hey, Jesus was physically dead and he rose up from the dead and people saw him. You know what I'm saying?
And I'm impressed you used the word nuance.
Well, I can spell it too.
I'm going to stow that in my vocabulary.
I can spell it.
Wesley, we got to talk about next week in Tupelo.
Yes, we do.
Is that sold out?
It's sold out. Activate Summit next week. So we really don't want to tell people they can't.
Oh, all right.
Hey, on a serious note, you've got somewhere you're going to be on June 5th. Tell us quickly.
On June 5th, I'm going to be at a summit out in Colorado. Yep. But that's probably sold out too. So we can't tell people about that either.
So what about your program?
Right.
Oh, Well, I got a program coming up on the 6th and 7th. Well, it's going to be this weekend, as you know, 9 o'clock Central, 10 o'clock Eastern, right there.
On American Family Radio.
Network.
Thanks, Frank.
All right, see you guys.
This June 24th marks 3 years since Roe v. Wade was overturned. But here's what you may not know. Abortion numbers have surged to a 10-year high. The battleground has shifted from the courtroom to our homes. Today, over 60% of abortions happen through the abortion pill, taken in silence, often alone. Preborn Network clinics are standing in the gap, meeting women in their most desperate hour. And here's what they're seeing. Young mothers, terrified and misled, are delivering their babies, tiny, perfectly formed, onto bathroom floors. These precious babies, once called just tissue, now lie lifeless. 11% of these women who take the abortion pill will suffer serious health complications. Countless others carry emotional scars for a lifetime. When you give to Preborn, you're not just saving a baby, you're saving a mother, too. You're giving her hope, financial support, and the truth. Preborn has already rescued over 350,000 babies, but there are so many more who need our help. Your tax-deductible gift makes this mission possible. To donate now, dial pound 250 and say the keyword baby. That's pound 250, baby. Or go to preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Wesley, Chris, and Ray, and we thank you for listening to AFR. Chris, what's the next story?
All right. A 45-year-old illegal alien from Egypt has been charged with a hate crime for that firebomb attack on a group of pro-Israel supporters over the weekend. On a group of pro-Israel supporters in Boulder, Colorado, who were calling attention to the Israeli hostages still in Hamas captivity. I bring this in because this morning, Border Czar Tom Homan went on Fox and blaming the Biden administration for, among other things, allowing so many migrants here in the country. Clip two.
They created the biggest national security vulnerability this country's ever seen. Not only did 2 million known gotaways, 2 million people cross the border, we don't know who they are, where they came from, we don't know where they are now. On top of that, even through the legal process, the Biden administration were bringing people unvetted, handing out work visas like they're candy while they sat here and planned something bad. We are going to be dealing with this for the next 10 years because of the chaos they created in 4 years. 2 million people paid more to get away. They didn't want to be vetted. They didn't want to be fingerprinted. Why? It should have scared out every American what the Biden administration did. This 2 million known gotaways scares me. So I'm convinced something's coming unless we can find them.
Okay, now, so just for a second. I questioned the use of the term firebomb because I hadn't heard that before. Mm-hmm. It was a flamethrower.
Well, he had Molotov cocktails.
Cocktails.
Are they called firebombs?
Okay. I understood what he meant when he said
okay,
that.
Okay. When you say bombs to me, I'm thinking Oklahoma City.
Mm-hmm. No.
And those kinds of things. Yeah. It's a small, but it's very deadly. Anyway, he threw two or three of those into this small crowd. Mm-hmm. Who were only there in Colorado, at the Boulder area, to have a rally in support of the hostages in Israel. And this guy, he came to America from Egypt, mm-hmm. and he had overstayed his work visa?
Yes.
Is that what it was?
Which means he was here illegally.
Yes. So, and then he went crazy here on whenever it was, Saturday or Sunday afternoon, and tried to kill all those people, and with a flamethrower, too. But he's been – the point the gentleman right there, Tom Homan, the Border Czar, basically, is making, Ray, and we talked about this a lot, and this was a big issue in the election. And I know the reason why Biden and the Democrats did this, but I don't think that by this I mean letting – some say 15 million people fled into our country.
Try to avoid some say. I think it's so, when you say.
Well,
some say.
Yeah, well, I don't know the exact number.
I know what you mean.
I'm talking about, but 15 million people, whatever it was. I mean, we remember those first now, 3 years.
There are reports that it's up to 18 million. I mean, so yeah. Anywhere, yeah, they're over 10, okay?
Yeah. Million people into our country that we didn't know who they were. They just flooded in here because Biden, after he took office and Trump left, he said, I'm getting rid of all Trump's restrictions against people coming into their country. I think just to spite Trump, right? And also I think that Biden and the Democrats were hoping, hey, we get these millions of people here, let them into our country illegally, and then they become lifelong Democrats once we get them registered to vote.
Now, first, you let them in. Second, right. You get them registered. Third, they vote Democrat every single election. And the Republican Party basically becomes a permanent minority
yes.
party. And the Dems are in the White House
right.
forever. It was a pretty good strategy in this sense. Millions of people got in illegally.
Right.
And you can say, well, did they want it to be that way? Yes, some of them. Some of the Democrats clearly wanted it
right.
to be that way. And I think Tom Homewood was simply pointing out, we don't know who these people
right.
were. We don't know where they are now. And some of them clearly are bad actors set on doing terrible things inside our country. We don't even have a way of tracking them down.
They call them gotaways.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Chris.
Well, I was going to say, we're probably going to hear more about what happened in Boulder this month as the Senate prepares to vote on the so-called Big Beautiful Bill. And I say that because I've got a soundbite here of Senator Ted Cruz, who says the Big Beautiful Bill, or BBB, will prevent crimes like what we saw in Boulder from happening again. Clip 4.
We're going to provide funding to build the wall, to hire more agents and ICE agents in detention facilities. But the Democrats continue just to embrace open borders. And apparently what they think America needs is more illegal immigrants, more gang members, more murderers, rapists, and more terrorists like this lunatic in Boulder. This guy was a lunatic who was at a pro-Israel protest, elderly Jewish people, including a Holocaust survivor there, calling for the release of hostages taken on October 7th. And this guy screams Free Palestine and lights them on fire.
Based on that, I think Senator Cruz is a yes on the Big Beautiful Bill.
Well, that's sort of changing subjects, but he's relating the two.
Yeah,
is Ted Cruz there? I don't know what'll happen with that Big Beautiful Bill when it gets through in the Senate. They got to negotiate it in the House again with the House, and who knows what's going to happen.
One other point I want to make on this story before we move on, and I wanted to wait to the end. I didn't want to take away from the bigger points here, but a smaller point here that should be emphasized is that this guy was also denied a firearm because of the process that works that we have in place. Did you know that? So
you're talking about the guy in Boulder, Colorado, the Egyptian guy.
So, Ahmadi.
Ahmad
Somali.
Who tried to kill all the people.
Yes, sir. Yeah. So he went to register for a gun and buy a gun legally, and our process worked. It denied him the right to purchase a firearm. And there's many reasons why you get denied. It's not just one. So the system worked when it's used properly. And so I just want to emphasize that when we come back around, if he had to have used a firearm, he would have had to have gotten it illegally.
Every time these things.
So we don't need more gun laws because gun laws worked if it's used properly. Anyways.
Right. So we don't. This is going to happen more and more. I'm talking about this. These illegal immigrants. Some of them. Gang members, cartel members, and are just people committing crimes. As it happens more, just you have to remember who let all these people in.
Yep,
you
know? That's right.
Yeah, who let all these people in. All right, next story, Chris.
All right, Oregon high school senior Alexa Anderson garnered national attention over the weekend when she refused to share the high jump medal podium with a male at a state track and field championship meet for females. It was in the state of Oregon. Now, viral footage of Anderson and fellow female athlete Reese Eckerd stepping down from the podium also showed an official gesturing for them to step to the side. Anderson, I have a clip from her, alleges the official ordered her and Eckerd, the other female athlete, to get out of the photo if they were not going to stand on the podium with the male who says he is a she. I've got audio from Alexa herself last night on Laura Ingraham's show, clip 5.
It's unfair because biological males and biological females compete at such different levels that allowing a biological male into our competition is taking up space and opportunity from all these hardworking women. The girl in ninth who should have been in eighth and had that podium spot had that taken away from her, as well as many others. We stepped off the podium in protest, and as you can see in the video, an official kind of told us, hey, go over there. If you're not going to participate, get out of the photos.
You couldn't even have your moment. That wasn't allowed. You had to stand forward, not your back to it.
Yes, they asked us to move away from the medal stand. So when they took the photos, we weren't even in it at all.
Now, I got to tell you, we've talked about this pretty much all year. Males and female sports has been a big issue on this topic. And even though President Trump signed that executive order saying no more males and female sports, Oregon, California, Maine, if you're a blue state, pretty much your state's probably talking about it if it's not already thumbing the nose at Trump.
Yeah, and we'll see what happens with the money because President Trump is committed to cutting off the some of the federal tax dollars that go for schools to these states that that are allowing boys to defeat girls in competition.
And interestingly enough, that tactic, that threat of we're going to cut your funding is something that even Joe Biden threw out there when he tried to change Title IX and make schools force.
Yeah.
By force, he was trying to make males and females.
I feel bad for people who live in these deep blue states in particular, Ray, because
the ones that don't want to be there, that are trapped.
Yeah, right. They're trapped for their job or whatever because this is – This movement's just being jammed down their throats.
I mean, what are you going to do?
Right.
I got a lot of friends in Oregon. I'm going to be out there in a couple of weeks. We said that earlier. I mean, there's a strong evangelical. It's a minority, clearly, in Oregon, but there's a strong evangelical community. What do you do if you've got daughters and they love track?
Right.
They love track and field, and they're good in athletics. And what are you going to do when suddenly one of these guys who wants to pretend to be a girl and they allow him to be in the high jump or they allow him to be in the 100 meters or whatever it is, and your daughter loses the chance to win because you're racing against a guy who's pretending to be a girl, that puts you in an awful situation. The only thing, I don't really have any answers for that except God bless these young women who had the courage.
I will say this about
step off the podium.
Yes, absolutely. Good for them because they're not participating in this sham that's going on. But another thing is, I was on vacation last week and we were on the Florida coast on the beach and I was visiting with some people, and there were another couple who had moved to the Nashville area, and this is not just true of the Nashville area, but other parts of the country that had left California.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, listen, I said, why'd you leave? Well, they're just, the liberal politics is getting, and not only from social issues, but also from taxation and regulation.
Regulation of the farmers?
Yes, and the businesses, and then the homelessness problem. I mean, there's...
And it's starting to creep outside the city a lot more.
Quality of life,
is not
like it used to be in the, I guess, the golden age of California.
Let me do this real quick. I want to emphasize and praise these two girls one more time, and then make a comment. You got Reese Eckerd, I think that's how you pronounce the name, Reese Eckerd from Sherwood High School, and Alexa Anderson from Tigard High School there in Oregon. Now, in addition to that, I want to point out they were two of the – there's five other women that had the opportunity to protest, and they didn't. There's eight winners. They recognized eight female athletes. One was a man. The other seven were females, and they were two of them. So we need more
young ladies who are willing to stand up,
Reese, cause
like Riley Gaines.
That's right. That should have been 100%. And if I'm the father – Or my wife was there, and the mother of the other five, I'd have helped. I'd have walked out there with them and said, "Hey, we're gonna do this way." You know, So they need some encouragement.
To add to our discussion here, I've got audio of Kim Herman. Now, Kim is an attorney with Southeastern Legal Foundation who said to us at AFN, listen, track and field, swimming, whatnot, it is just a game. But when it comes to things like high school sports, it matters that females are being forced to compete against males. Clip six.
The reality is that in sports, there's winners and there's losers, right? We want our 5-, 6-, 7-year-olds to play the game, to learn how to play the game. But when you're talking about athletes at a high school level, you are talking about scholarships that are on the line. You are talking about whether or not some of these girls will have the opportunity to go to college on a scholarship. And those scholarships are based off of winning and losing and off of people's records. And so when boys compete in girls' sports and they take these championships, take them, they are cheating. They are also taking away scholarship opportunities. And for many of these young women, it is the opportunity at all to go to college.
All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Thankfully, a lot of states have already taken the red states in particular have taken the, you know, they've made it clear through state legislation that the boys will compete with boys and girls will compete with girls when it comes to athletics. I want to change the subject just a minute. Ray, do you know what's happened in the Ukrainian-Russian war in the last 48, 72 hours? It's pretty amazing. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Would you explain it basically to our listeners?
As best I understand it. It's totally unexpected. A major drone attack from Ukraine deep into Russia. It's one thing to do a drone attack, Tim, 20 or 30 miles across the border. So they went much deeper into Russia, and they hit the Russian strategic nuclear assets. And everybody's asking the question, how did they do that? Where did they get that information? And behind that is the question, who else knew about it? Would the Ukraine have dared to do that without letting the White House know? Did the White House sign off on it tacitly, so to speak? I was reading an article a little while ago. The folks in the Kremlin are understandably furious because this is an attack at the very heart of the Russian nuclear arsenal. No one expected this. I would say, Tim, it's a major escalation in the war and the tension between Russia and Ukraine. And you kind of wonder now, Tim, if Russia's going to answer back and what they're going to do. I don't see this as moving the peace process forward. It seems like it's further apart now. And peace, any so-called peace agreement seems further away to me than it did 48 hours ago.
In addition to what you just described, there was a news story this morning. Crimea, for those who don't know, is used to be a part of the Ukraine, right?
Right.
The Ukraine, the country. And then when was it about? It was during the Obama administration. Was it 10 years ago or 12
Russia
years ago?
Moved on Crimea.
12
yeah, when
50.
Russia took it over.
Okay,
Russia well, you know, they want a Black Sea port in Crimea. I mean, that's the perfect.
2014.
Okay, 2014.
The
Russian, with no resistance, took over Crimea. They basically took that from the Ukraine.
Sure.
And so a lot of people call it occupied Crimea because Russia occupies it. Russia has been there with their troops and so forth, and Ukraine evidently used a drone to destroy a bridge.
Right.
And I read where it's the only bridge between Crimea and Ukraine. Is that what you read?
That's exactly right.
Let me just say this about, and I'm no expert whatsoever on geopolitical events in anywhere in the world, but I just following this, I read about this, the Ukraine-Russia war, I keep up with it. I think now Ukraine is making a statement that they are in it for the long haul, longer than the 3 years, and they'll go down in a blaze of glory if they have to, but they're not giving I don't think. Maybe Zelensky and his team will decide to give up more land to Russia in this effort to end the war. I'm not saying that would be a bad thing, but I am saying with the strikes they've made in the last few days with this top secret, I mean, right out of Hollywood,
right,
attack in deep inside Russia, which is shocking, with drones that destroyed big military.
What
do you call them?
This whole thing about drone warfare has completely changed the nature of the battlefield. Tim, you've seen some of these. I mean, the drones can be used for micro hits.
Oh, yeah.
You've seen some of these videos
where
there are Russian soldiers sitting there and there's a drone buzzing around.
No question. Without drones, Russia would have already taken over.
Right, right.
Ukraine.
So sometimes you have these little tiny drones, but they can take out an individual soldier. But in this case, you have there's some kind of super secret technology that the rest of us don't know about that allowed the Ukrainian drones to get up, get through Russian airspace, and hit those strategic Russian air bases that I think the Russians never expected that to happen. So the whole military calculus on the battlefield has changed now.
I just don't think that President Trump's engaged in this anymore. I think he's dropped it. This is the sense I'm getting.
Or that he
gave it his best shot.
He
gave it his best shot at getting the two sides to a peaceful solution, and it didn't work. And so he sort of washed his hands of it. Is that what you got kind of think?
It does feel that way. I mean, he did say, right, and everybody understands Trump speaks in hyperbole. On the first day, in one day, I can solve the Ukrainian war with Russia in one day. And then he gave it his best shot. He intervened. We had the showdown with Zelensky, and then he basically called out Putin a week or two ago. He does have the feeling he's gone, look, I can't do anything to help
him. Right,
yeah.
They're just going to have to work it out. It'll just have to be what it is. I just don't think – I think President Trump's –
Well, then let me ask you the question. Yeah. If that's true, are the Russians just going to sit back and take this, or are they not going to retaliate?
That's scary.
It is scary.
It's a scary thought because retaliation up in the level of combat between the two would mean – potentially using nuclear weapons.
Strategic or battlefield nuclear weapons.
And Kyiv, they already are bombing Kyiv some.
Sure.
Russia is, so that's the Kyiv being the major metropolitan area there in the major city in Ukraine. Have you had any contact at all with your folks over there in the Ukraine?
I mentioned last week that I was down in Florida. In Florida last week and ran into completely, quote, providential chance, if you want to call it that, the leader of Word of Life's work in the Ukraine, and we talked for a little bit. It is shattering. That's the word that I would use. It is shattering what has happened to the Ukrainian people, and they have been pushed and pushed and pushed to the limit.
Right.
I think in poker terms, this an amazing drone strike on the strategic bases, that's almost like standing up and pushing everything to the middle of the table and saying, okay, boys, we're going all in now.
I know, President Trump said Russia had all the cards, right? In a gambling metaphor, but he said that
turns out Ukraine had a few.
Yeah.
I was going to say that makes me think they're not telling the White House everything. Mm-hmm. And from their point of view, I don't blame them because I'm not faulting President Trump. I'm not saying everything he's decided is right or wrong. I'm not making a value judgment on that. I'm just saying I do think he's underestimated the commitment of the Ukraine to fight back against Russia, and evidently their ability to do so,
right?
Based on what's happened here in the last 3 or 4 days.
Well, you sort of wonder who gave them this technology. If it wasn't us, was it Germany? Was it one of the other European
France,
countries?
Maybe.
France, yeah.
Who knows?
France is really good at getting involved in a conflict. getting out of it is another historical conversation. Yeah. To your point about the Trump administration seemingly stepping back from that, there was a story to that effect yesterday from ABC News, which we all know is most likely against Trump. But they do say the Trump administration has stepped back from talks here. Marco Rubio has been involved in some things, but even he has not as been involved in recent days.
Yeah. Well, you know, most of the world's wars have been over land. The other reasons, ideology, money,
resources,
retaliation for something, perceived wrongs. But probably a majority of the world's wars over history have been over land. People won't. And Russia's saying, you know, Ukraine's a threat to them and NATO's a threat to them. And of course, so Russia was the one, though. Russia was the country that started attacking first militarily.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
In this war. Yeah. So that is a fact. All right. We will return with more of today's issues on the American Family Radio Network. Pray for the Christian people Ray's talking about in the Ukraine. Well, pray for the Christian people in Russia, too.
Absolutely.
But they don't want to be at war either. But this has just been, you said shattering.
Shattering.
Shattering to
the people. It was on his face as we talked last week.
You could see it.
It's been shattering.
Well, imagine your homeland being under attack and under siege for 2 or 3 years by a foreign enemy and how you would, you know, react to that. We'll be back with more of today's issues in a moment. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.